bringing Gosport closer to you.
The Community Show with
Paul Dodd on Gosport Hospital Radio.
Hello, good evening and welcome. It is I, Paul Dodd, back from his holidays. And part of me likes to say he wish he wasn't, because I'm really not well. But hey, we'll give it a go, eh? Now, to those of you who've been listening to the show for eons, and that's more than 12 months, you will know at this time of the year, I tend to interview what I consider to be one of the bravest ladies I've ever met. I was very privileged to be the very first person to ever interview her on air, anywhere. I was the second, and I'll hold us for that one, but I was only the second person to interview her after she came back from the Pride of Britain Awards, the little winner. And tonight we'll be talking to a little lady called Charlotte Fairhall. She is the CEO, the founder, and the mother of Sophie from Sophie's Legacy. So I'm going to get the tears out of the way first, because this one cracks me up, it really does. Every year, it doesn't fail to drive me down there. Sophie was created in memorial of Sophie Fairhall, and it was a legacy of change she wanted to create. She just turned 9 when she was diagnosed with a rare form of childhood cancer, and I'm not going to try and pronounce it, I'll leave that to Charlotte, because she's good at it, in September 2020. During her treatment, she endured 9 rounds of intense chemotherapy, 7 weeks of radiotherapy. She then managed to get into remission, and in June 21, after only 8 weeks on a program of maintenance chemotherapy, she relapsed. We had no treatment options left. Sophie passed away, aged 10, in September 2021, just 1 year after a diagnosis. But what Charlotte's going to do tonight is, bravely, she will take you through the misdiagnosis, she'll take you through the lack of diagnosis, the awful, awful times that she went through trying to get her daughter seen to, what it's meant to her and the family, and then what she's done in Sophie's legacy for Sophie. Stay tuned. So, Charlotte, welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me back again.
No, it's always a pleasure, certainly at this time of the year, because I think with children in need coming up week after next, I think now, we used to do it in October, and I think this is probably now a better time. I think it's just a little bit closer to the heart. I think it means a little bit more, and I think your story touches so many people. Say hello to David Smith, by the way, when you see him.
Ah, yes, I will.
He's just about to come and work for me.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
When he gets better. He's off ill now. He was supposed to start last week. Now he's off ill. So, start the story.
Yes, yeah, so Sophie was unwell in the summer of 2020. And we'll probably all remember that, because it was COVID. So when everyone was in lockdown. And it's not the time to get ill, because obviously back then it was just really difficult to see a GP. And she started having stomach pains, feeling really sick. She was always a girl who loved her food, and to be not eating was very unusual for her. But she would wake up and just say she struggled, she felt sick and was struggling to eat until at least afternoon, which was very unlike her. there was a week in August of 2020 that she was didn't move for 5 days out of bed, really. She was just in so much pain, and I've managed to get an in-person appointment with the GP. The previous conversations with them had been over the phone, and they'd give us things like Gaviscon, and I'd be like, her pain is not up here, it's down in her lower tummy. So but anyway, they saw her that week, and they felt her tummy, and they felt it was hard, but they thought it was maybe a bowel infection and it would improve over time. If it didn't, they'll give her something for it. And then she did improve. You know, in the next few days, she started to feel better. So, you trust what they're saying. And then she went on holiday with her grandparents and a couple of her cousins. And it was on the second day of that holiday, still in August, that she started bleeding, but was too embarrassed, didn't know what it was. We hadn't had a conversation about periods or anything. So, you know, she was only just turned 9. She was 9 in that August. So, she didn't know really what it was. And it was only when she came back, because she hadn't told anyone, that I noticed when I was doing her washing. I was like, something's a bit odd. What's happening? And I said, Sophie, what's been happening? And she said, I don't know, Mum, but I'm still bleeding. And I said, right. By this point, it had been 8 days of her bleeding. And I said, there's something definitely wrong. I knew then, instantly, something serious was wrong. I phoned the GP immediately. They said, over the phone, it would be her first period. I said, hands down, I know this is not, and I want it recorded that it's not, because I know my child.
And at 9?
At 9, they said it was possible. I said, it may well be possible, but it isn't for my child. I know she's not developed in any way. You know, you haven't seen her to know. And I said, and even if it is her first period, this is really odd. This isn't how a period works. 8 days and it's getting worse each day. I said, look, I know how a period works. This is not her period. And they said, if she's still bleeding by Monday, because of course this was Friday, then we'll get her in and see a GP.
If she's got any blood left.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought, okay, I'm not getting anywhere. Anyway, on the Saturday, I woke up and I can only call it like a mother's instinct. I just thought, something's not right and I need to deal with it, and I can't wait till Monday. So I phoned 111 and I had the same conversation, staying on my arguments with them. And for hours, went back and forward over this. And they said, look, we could get an out-of-hours appointment with the GP who could give an injection to stop her bleeding. I said, why on earth would you do that when... I said, she's 9. You don't know the reason why she's bleeding. Why would you give a 9-year-old that? And I said, look, I want her seen and I want her something to be looked at. I know something's not right. And they said, look, if you're that concerned, take her up to A&E. And I said, that's exactly what I'll do then. So I took her up to Portsmouth A&E. And which was very quiet. She wasn't very happy about being pulled off of Roblox that she was playing with her friends, and looked fine and well. Like, you wouldn't think anything is wrong. You know, she was full of energy walking into the waiting room, and you know, you think, am I overreacting here?
Yeah.
But I just knew that something wasn't right, and I went in. They saw us really quick because no one was in children's A&E at that point. You know, no one was in hospital really, apart from adults that was full of COVID. But and I went in, we saw really quickly, and the paediatrician pretty much saw us straight away and said, how long she had this lump for? And I went, what lump? And that's when they found a huge mass in her abdomen. And obviously later on, obviously it was scanned and measured and everything, and it was a 12 centimetre tumour in her abdomen, which she was, you know, encased for the size she was a very big tumour. And we were transferred to Southampton Hospital the next day, and she had an operation on the Thursday of that week. You know, the Monday, Tuesday, I think we'd had loads of MRIs, scans, CT scans. We'd had so many. And the poor girl, you know, she'd never spent a night in hospital, and now we're going through all of these, you know, an MRI.
No, she's living.
It's horrific for most people going in that tunnel, let alone a 9-year-old who, and it was the worst, one of the worst MRIs actually for her. You know, she was held down with sandbags on her legs to try and keep her still. She was in so much pain, had tears running down her face in the pain that she was in. But she was determined to do what they told her to, which was stay still.
Yeah.
And, you know, no preparation for that, but she went in and did what she was told to do, effectively.
Could they not sedate her?
They wouldn't at her age. If she was younger, they would, but not her age. But there should have been some prep.
Yeah.
So, and obviously now I'm a big campaigner of, like, that's why play. you know, the play specialists are really important because that's what they do.
Yeah.
They have the Lego, you know, designs of the MRI machines, yeah. and they can talk through all of this and actually explain it all. Lucky I had had an MRI before, so I was able to talk through what happens, but that was the only prep she really got. And I was in there with her as well, so... And then Thursday was the operation. Still at this point, they didn't know if it was cancer or not. We were on a surgical ward. We weren't on the cancer ward. They knew it was a tumour of some description, but they weren't sure if it was benign or cancerous. They actually thought it was, if it was going to be cancerous, it would have been ovarian cancer because they thought the ovary was attached to it from yeah. looking at it. And so we actually signed consent to remove the ovary. And it ended up, obviously, she went on that Thursday, very long operation, very long. And when you're a parent waiting in there, I was on my own because no one else was allowed in. And it was hours stuck in that room waiting for them to come back. And I binge watched a lot of Netflix that day. So they ended up, the surgeon came and found me and said, you know, take you to a side room, which you always know. I thought, this isn't going to yeah. be good. And they said... she's well, she's recovering from operation, but it's definitely cancer and they've not been able to remove it all. It's definitely not ovarian cancer. The ovary was still intact, but he thought, and he was right, and that it was rhabdomyosarcoma, so a type of soft tissue type of cancer. And he said we couldn't remove it all. It was attached to everything, and if we removed it all, we would have had to basically mutilate her, which we ethically is not right. So they got about 95% of it, you know, thankfully some incredible surgeons at Southampton who did that. And that started our journey, really. You know, we're under the cancer ward from then on. We did 9 rounds of inpatient, very aggressive chemotherapy in Southampton, and she had 7 weeks of radiotherapy in London. That was in the December to the February.
That's a killer.
And yeah, that was the daily radiotherapy
that
there.
That is so debilitating.
She had a lifetime max of radiotherapy.
Wow.
You couldn't have given her any more. And I don't know if anyone has ever, you know, seen a radiotherapy, but it is, you know, leaving her in there on this metal bed, effectively, with this massive machine on her own. I mean... It was a fairly long time she was in.
I went through my dad with his, you know, yeah. and I saw how it debilitated him, what it must do to a 9-year-old.
Yeah, and it basically it kills whatever is in the area they're yeah. targeting. Now, they targeted the whole of her abdomen. Now, there's a lot of organs in her abdomen.
yeah.
So, you know, it did extensive damage to her. And had she survived, she would have had a lifelong set of issues as a result of her radiotherapy. And I struggled to sign consent. I actually initially refused because I said, we're giving her a life sentence here. This is not curing her. This is maybe getting rid of the cancer, but it's not curing her of anything. She would have, you know, a whole list of problems. But we got, you know, we carried on with the treatment. And then the end of April was, she finished all her, you know, main lot of chemotherapy and all her frontline treatment, they call it. And then we started on maintenance chemotherapy, which was me giving our chemo at home every day, and then we're going in once a week for day patient chemo. And okay. that was meant to last a year. But sadly, 8 weeks into that, during a routine MRI in the June of 21, they discovered a brand new tumour. And again, I had a gut instinct that something wasn't right. I kept saying to them, she's relapsed, isn't she? And they kept saying, and they wouldn't answer. And I thought, I know this. I can't even answer why, because there was no signs, there was no symptoms, nothing, but I just had this instinct. So we were called back in, and they did say she has relapsed. She, you know, she's got a brand new tumour in the area that had the most amount of treatment, and that was the bitter blow.
Yeah.
The radiotherapy, she had the highest dose possible to the area that it grew back in, and I was like, we're never going to get rid of this, are we?
No.
And they said, we don't think we will. They offered us, you know, some options, palliative chemo. They could have removed her bladder and they could have carried on with some more chemo. She would have been inpatient for 6 months looking at...
But still passed at the end of it all.
And that's what they said. I said, will she survive if we did all this? And they said, we think it will come straight back. And I said, why would you do this to her? Like, she hated hospital. And I said, it would be for selfish reasons of me wanting more time with her rather than the quality of life that she would have. And potentially, you know, the whole of that treatment could have killed her in hospital. You know, it's brutal. So we had the heart-wrenching decision of what do we do? You know, she's still nine. And, you know, as a parent, you're desperate to find anything can save her. But I think I knew quite realistically, if this frontline treatment didn't work, I don't think anything would. And I sort of knew, I said, okay. I wanted Sophie to be part of that decision-making, which, right or wrong, people can question me on that, but I thought she was a very bright, articulate child. This was her life. This was her... She was going to have to go through all of this.
Very much so.
If we were going to go ahead with it all, and I wanted her... She wouldn't have had the final say, because as parents we would have, but I wanted her to have a say. And she initially said... I don't want to be in hospital, Mum. You know that. And I said, I know. And I said, you know, about the palliative chemo, about trying to hold it, you know. And she said, okay, let's try that. And we did. So we tried that. But it did nothing. And I sort of probably knew that it wasn't going to do anything, really, because she needed really aggressive
treatment. It's all about giving her the best life she can have for the last few weeks, isn't it?
Yeah. So we... She set out writing her bucket list at this point, and you know, and in the July we decided to stop all treatment. It was, there's no point giving her palliative chemo, making her feel sick and all the side effects for that, when she, you know, this was impacting on her the very short time that she had left. So we just said, let's stop all treatment. We could have just given her water, it would have been the same thing, to be honest, because it was growing at such a fast rate. We've given her palliative chemo, so we decided to stop. And carried on with her bucket list. She packed in so much in that time, every day. I don't know how she did it, to be honest, but she would wake up and she'd go, Mum, give me every drug you've got. I've got to get through today. I've got to make the most of today. And she had the most incredible spirit and never once moaned about that this is all I've got left, or moaned about that she was in horrific pain, which she was in horrific pain. You know, the amount of morphine given to her was off the scale. And I was having to just keep giving as much as I could, you know, able to, really. But, yeah, in the, obviously, end of August, her tumour blocked her bowel by this point, and it meant that she was hospitalised, and she never was able to move, you know, walk again after that. She became bedbound, but she was determined. She said, I want to die at home. I do not want to die in this hospital, Mum. But I went... Yeah, I agree. Mainly for some of the reasons is that it was still COVID restrictions.
Yeah.
So the whole of her treatment, only one parent was allowed in. Her siblings weren't allowed in. No other family member or her friends. And she was desperate to say goodbye to them all.
Awful.
So she wanted to go home to say goodbye, even to say goodbye to a hamster or, you know, her pets that she adored. So we managed to get home. It was touch and go right near the end. I didn't think at one point we would do it. But she held on, and we went home on the Friday, and they said, we don't think she'll make Sunday. And she lasted 8 days at home. She was one determined girl. She was not going to wait, but she sadly died, just turned 10 on the 18th of September 21. And, she was, you know, she fought to the very bitter end and showed everyone, I think, how to live their life. You know, to appreciate those little bits that we all take for granted, like being able to walk. You know, when she was bedbound in those final few weeks, she designed medals for our 10Ks. And, you know, she said, it got encourage people to get out and move, Mum, while they still can. Because you don't realise how much you take it for granted until it's taken away.
Okay, let's play your first record. And I don't want to play that one, because that one's going to come up in a minute. So do you want... Which one of the Robbie Williams ones do you want?
Oh, should we go No Regrets?
Right. So we'll play Robbie Williams with No Regrets. And after this, we'll then go into the charity.
Yes.
How you formed the charity.
Yeah.
Then the family, because it's had a devastating effect on the family as well.
Yeah.
This is Robbie Williams, No Regrets.
Tell me a story I'll change, and we'd live our lives together, another strange. I didn't lose my mind, it was my answer giveaway. Couldn't stay to watch me cry, you didn't have the time, so I softly slipped away. No regrets, they don't work. No regrets now, they only hurt. Drop me a line. Suppose it's just a point of view, but they tell me I'm doing for each other. Felt things were going wrong when you didn't like my mother. I don't want to hate, but that's all you've left me with. A bitter aftertaste and a fantasy of how we are could live. No regrets, they don't work. No regrets now, they only hurt. Just stop hating you. I feel sorry for us instead. Remember the photographs insane, the one where we are left so lame. We were having the time of our lives. Well, thank you. It was a real blast.
No regrets, Robbie Williams. Now, for somebody who's got no regrets, oh, good grief, you're the epitome of no regrets. I think you've got more regrets than you can shake a stick at. However, you never show regret towards the people who've let you down. Now, Sophie's passing, Sophie decided that actually she wanted you to do something because not many people had helped you cope with her. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, she saw that there should be things that were different in the hospital and our experience. So things like, she kept saying, why are you not getting fed, Mum? Like, you're in here because I'm unwell. Why are they not feeding you? And even more pivotal, because she said, by you going to get food, you have to leave me, and I don't want you to leave me. She was in a room on her own, and if I left her, that meant she was on her own.
Yeah.
And that, you know, became really difficult. So it was things like that, things like the play, things like the children's food. She kept saying, you know, every hospital she'd go to, she's like, it's the same everywhere we go. This isn't right. And I think she just felt that the experience didn't need to be as difficult as it was. And I felt the same. You know, we would have long conversations. You know, there's not much to do in a hospital room, to be honest.
No.
You know, we're confined to a room together. So we would have lots of conversations about this. And, you know, we would see other families going through and they didn't have cancer, but they were in long term and they weren't able to access anything, any support. And we'd be like, that's not right. So in her final, you know, particularly part of her bucket list, but particularly in her final few weeks, she made me promise her that I would finish her, basically her bucket list, which was making these changes that she so desperately wanted. And they were changes that she wanted nationally. She didn't leave me an easy task, I will say. I think she was worried about, I know she was saying, I'm worried how you're going to cope when I'm gone, Mum. I remember her when we brought her home, how she would be saying that. She'd see me crying when she'd wake up, and she'd be saying, you know, Mum, I'm worried. I'm worried about you. You know, and so I think deep down, I think she thought, this will keep my mum busy. This will get her up, because she made me promise her. She knows that my girls always know, if I promise something, I'll do it.
So coping with Lucy, Amelia and Gareth's grief wasn't going to be enough for you then?
No.
How are they doing, by the way?
Yeah, all right. They have grown up fast.
What's Lucy now, 19?
19, scarily, 19. Yeah. She's about to go travelling around the world. So that would be more grey hairs for me, but an incredible experience.
Let me give you a little story to help you out.
Oh.
I used to have three girls come to this show with me in various stages, and one of them was a young girl called Bethany. Bethany was knee-high to a grasshopper. I reckon if she was 4'6", she was an inch. And she was, she used a cycle from Porchester to come here for the show on a Thursday night in the dark every week, and then cycle back again. Used to frighten the life out of me,
yeah,
this little girl. And she was only 16, 17. And then she left school at 18 and was about to go into Kent University as an architect. And one day just decided, no, I'm going to go travelling. And I went, okay, good for you, what are you doing? New Year's Eve, she says, I'll land in Rio de Janeiro. And I went, you're joking. You're pulling my leg, aren't you? No, she says. And she got a backpack, literally, nothing more, and went backpacking around Peru, Bolivia, and all of those drug-ridden countries over there on her own. And I'm going, you can't do it. No, no. And I begged her. We tried everything, but off she went. 12 months later, she came back, and I said, how was it? She said, yeah, I'm only here for the weekend, she said, because I'm off again tomorrow. She says, now I'm going to do Europe. And I last saw her about 2 years ago. She had spent 3 years globe-trotting the world on her own, had had some amazing adventures, had never got into trouble, never got any money, just backpacked doing little jobs from A to B, all over the place.
Yeah.
Have faith. These girls are more resilient.
Oh, she is. Yeah. I mean, she has worked extremely hard to save up all her money. She works at Nando's, and, you know, we love Nando's. We don't want to miss out on her working at Nando's. But she,
that's a bit selfish.
I know, I keep saying, you can't leave. And Hannah, who's listening, I know, yeah, that I'm on my team. She's like, no, we've got an addiction to chicken, we think. But she's worked. She's
so nothing to do with your daughter, then? You just don't want your Nando's?
Yeah, I know, you can't leave. Yeah. But she's had...
Sophie, don't listen.
Yeah, she's had
Sorry, Lucy, don't listen, so
3 years she's worked nearly. She's not had one day off sick. She's worked, you know, she's now working a lot of hours because she's full time there to try and save up all the money. You know, she's got really good work ethic. She's driven, she's determined, and she's going to have an amazing experience. And it's going to be, I think for her, it's probably an element of escape to get out from this, you know, the last few years that we've had, escape to another world, effectively, that is freedom. And I think it will be the making of her. You know, I just hope that she's sensible, and you hope that all the grounding you've done is going to see her through. But it's, yeah, it's going to be hard. And yeah, just be me and Amelia at home, which will be really odd.
And what's Amelia now? 15? 13.
She is.
Oh, 13.
So hormonal city.
I thought she was a year old in that way.
So yeah.
Do I remember rightly that her birthday is almost the same as Sophie's?
Yeah. So Amelia and Sophie were only effectively their birthdays a week apart.
Yeah.
So they're actually only 51 weeks apart from each other, which is crazy. I know. But yeah. So they were very close. They're both in August, and they were very, very close.
How does her birthday relate these days?
It's okay. We keep it obviously very separate. You know, we've had to really work at that. She doesn't really like big birthdays. She's not very social one. She likes things, you know, just
and is
a
that
few
because
friends.
Of Sophie?
No, she's no. Very much she doesn't really like other people, to be honest. she's got a diagnosis of autism, and she
send her off backpacking.
Oh no. she likes her own company. Right. And she's very happy. She, you know,
I can relate to that.
She, you know, I think, you know, she likes animals, she likes that, and actually people can annoy her. And I quite understand.
And how's Gareth doing?
Yeah, he's doing all right. We obviously, you know, we did separate 2 years ago. I think navigating grief together
is very difficult.
Yeah. But, you know, we're on good terms, we get on, and, yeah, we just co-parent now, but not together in the same house.
It must have been difficult for you both, you dealing with Sophie, him not able to deal with Sophie.
Yeah, we had very different journeys in that year. He was, because only one parent was allowed in, he obviously was at home with the kids.
And, I guess any couple, yeah, any couple during COVID with any sort of trauma of that ilk went through exactly the same. Mm. You know, I remember watching the news where there were people who, yeah, I can't go home tonight because my wife's got COVID and she needs to get better, so I'm going to sleep on the bus shelter.
Yeah.
And you think, oh my God. And then with what happened, what came out from the government thereafter, I have real fears that should anything ever happen like that again, we'll never achieve a lockdown.
No, I don't think we will.
I don't think anybody will ever go there again.
I don't think we will. No. And you look back now and you just think, it was crazy, you know, that Sophie's siblings not been allowed in, you know, they were very angry about that.
Yeah.
Particularly because of what happened, like where she died, and they missed out on all that time with her. And, you know, they did really struggle, you know, as did Sophie's dad. And, you know, he missed out on that time with her, which was, you know, you'll never get that back.
No.
And, you know, so we did very different journeys. You know, I sadly lost my job when Sophie was diagnosed, so he needed to keep his. He was able to work at home, thankfully, and able to look after them while I was in the hospital. And we did a huge amount of hospital stays, so we're effectively like running two houses over that year. So it has a massive impact. And then trying to navigate the loss of a child together is really difficult.
I mean, I'm convinced personally that the lockdown was the right thing to do. I mean, I'm a training manager in Salton. I was having 24 new students from all over the country every fortnight. We didn't have one case of COVID because of the restrictions we put in.
Mm.
And yet in Gosport alone, there was by the time we'd finished, there was 800 cases in Gosport.
Wow.
And we didn't have one in Salton.
Yeah.
Purely because of those lockdown restrictions we put in.
Yeah.
So whether you believe it or not, I'm convinced it was the right thing to do. You know, I don't think the government were particularly good in the way they handled themselves at it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to invoke a rule, you're the first person who's got to obey that rule.
Yes, exactly.
You know, but, and I think that let a lot of people down. But the difference it makes to families, you know, you'd got no support. Your family, your girls needed their mum.
Mm.
Gareth needed his wife.
Mm.
You know, none of you had any of that.
And it was really difficult. Like, I was in a room on my own. You know, and I used to say prisoners got more airtime, you know, fresh airtime than what we got. You know, we were I don't think anyone can really truly understand what it's like to be in a hospital room on your own with a child that's seriously unwell, and particularly near the end when I knew she was dying, and never really getting out of that room. It's it has, you know, and I've seen in other families, you know, it's really tough. Like, mentally, it's really tough. 24 hours in a room is hard. You try a week in there and or more, and it's really tough. And that's why the charity exists. That, you know, we do so much in there to try and brighten the day. It doesn't have to be so difficult in that there was nothing. You know, the cleaner used to come in, and I think she used to dread coming in my room because I'd be like, I just want to talk to people, yeah. You know, and she'd come in, and I think about 10 minutes later, she might have finally got out, which should have been a quick in and out.
Well, I had to spend a day in hospital with my grandson last year when he had eye surgery. And for a little 8-year-old, that was terrifying.
Mm.
Nowhere near what you went through, but it was terrifying for him. But thanks to you and to Sophie, we got fed.
Mm.
They built a veranda on the outside of his room, and there was a playroom so he could get out of bed and go and play 4 floors up on this veranda, but he could go and play. There was a communal room. People could go and talk to each other. And that's down to you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Now, I'm going to play this because the next thing I want to talk about is the charity. But before I do this one's going out to my new best mate. She doesn't know it yet, and she's coming in a few weeks' time. And I'm still waiting for her to tell me when she's coming in. But the person who helps you run your charity is young Hannah.
Yes.
And I've invited Hannah to come in and tell us all about setting up a charity and running a charity, because that'll be fun. And I've got a couple of guys in there who needs to know how to do this properly. So, Hannah, this one's for you. I'm told you like to
dance if you like. You can sing every line of every song. No, you don't have to steal the show. It was your show all along as the orchestra played. The people take the seats. There's no room left in this house. It's only you and me, and if life is your stage, I'll be watching. Hold up the light for me, 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 you do as we start rehearsing every scene, the words to everything. We realize that the crowd is listening, and then the tears fall down on your face at exactly the right place as the people start to stand up in the aisle. You can hear the sound of violins on every street tonight. You can see our lovers dancing round. I'll be watching. Hold up the light for me. 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 Oh. And I'll be
station. Hold up the light for me, hold up the light. Hold up the light for me, hold up the light. Hold up the light for me, hold up the light. Hold up the light for me, hold up the light for me.
So, having worked for Flagship, VT, VT Group, VT1, Babcock, and now I'm in Capita, it would appear that I might have worked with Hannah at some stage. This is scary. I'm not looking forward to this now, because she probably knows who I am better than I know who she is. In which case, I'm in real trouble. Right, so, you formed the charity. Five big issues, really, for the charity. Play specialists 7 days a week in hospitals. Improvements for food for children in hospital. For parents to be fed when staying with their child, for GP nurses and health professionals to be trained in childhood cancer, and to increase the funds, currently 3% in childhood cancer research. You've done most of that, most of it, because in September, September marked the Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, and as co-chair of the government's Children and Young People Cancer Task Force, my mate Caroline leapt onto this one quite nicely, didn't she?
She did, and we've been working together for the last 4 years. We've become, good two very strong women to try and battle through. With the
government. I have no doubt. Yeah, I know you both, and
you
I have no doubt.
You probably wouldn't take us two on, really, with the determination and grit.
Well, I would, but not without mates.
I don't blame you. So we have fought hard over the last 4 years, is all I can say. You know, I've seen every single health secretary there's been since December 21. And, we've worked hard, and the 10-year cancer plan is literally about to be published. I'll keep waiting for the date, but it's all ready to go. There is some huge changes coming on the children and young people. So it's not 24-year-olds, that's how they class all the children and young people. And
do you know why 24?
Yeah, why 24? I've always
because that's the upper age limit of care leavers.
Oh, I've always wondered why this is. That's very odd.
Well, 25 is actually the upper age limit. It's the same in the forces. We have to treat them with safeguarding up till they're 25 if they've come out of care, because they're still classed as care leavers.
Okay, that's interesting.
There you go.
But yeah,
good grief, I've talked Charlotte something.
We've been working hard, and we've had weekly meetings with the government pretty much since March. We've pulled together this with the very top people in this country of children's cancer, and we've pulled a load of recommendations. There is some really massive changes on there, and it will really change the course for, I hope, for generations to come on children's cancer.
I mean, I've got a lot of time.
I can't wait for this to be published.
I mean, I've got a lot of time for Caroline. We get on very well together. And I've got to say, irrespective of your party politics, when she's on your side, you're not going to get anybody fight harder.
No.
Absolutely not.
And there was lots of MPs that have been approached by lots of other families who have lost their children.
Yeah, last year.
And they haven't done the same.
No, last year you were still waiting for the outcome of this and the outcome of that.
Yeah.
And this minister had promised you and that minister had promised you, and still nothing had happened.
I know. We have been really, this just literally determined, and I'm very stubborn. I know it's one of my traits, but actually stubbornness has really come into play for trying to get these changes, because I'm just not willing to give up. And the good thing about probably with me being on the task force is that I'm not bound by red tape or maybe I shouldn't say this because I might lose my job or whatever.
What have you got to lose?
Exactly. So I've challenged
them quite hard.
You've already lost the job. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I've challenged them very hard on quite a lot of things, because actually I want there to be the best we can get for this, and there is some really, really good things coming, so I'm so excited on this. And all of her other wishes, it's been like a horse race, and one keeps going ahead and then the other one, and I keep going, what one are we going to get first? And I actually am now starting to think we'll get them all at the same time. It's going to be sod's law. They're all going to come through because they're all literally now neck and neck. We've got massive changes coming on all of her wishes, and it has been through blood, sweat and tears of 4 years work, to be honest. And we're making national change across the country on feeding parents.
Oh, you are.
On the food, children's food is huge now. There's food standards that we're working on with NHS England, my lovely mate Phil Shelley from there, and we're working together to write some food standards for children in hospital, which have never been produced ever, and they'll be published next year. It's a 26 job.
I mean, I didn't know till last year that most hospital food for children comes from one of about four places nationally.
Yeah, so most food, that if it's not cooked on site, most food actually all predominantly tends to come from Appetito, which is the sister sort of company of Wiltshire Farm Foods. We're now working with Appetito. So, I mean, they're the big players in this field. They cover 600 hospitals in this country. So big ones. And they've now chosen us as one of the charities to work on the healthcare side and working on overhauling their children's food. I've got a meeting with them tomorrow, actually. They've got a big announcement that comes, so I'm waiting to see. But I know they're having a massive overhaul of their children's offering because of our work with them. And I did say their food for children is not good enough. You know, I sometimes think I maybe need to learn how to have a filter. But
would you have achieved as much as you've done without the filter? With a filter?
No, I think I'm, you know, I'm not rude. I will just be quite firm.
You're
and
still polite.
Honest. Yeah, I'm polite. I'm just honest.
You're well mannered.
And I will say the truth.
Yeah.
And it's not always what people want to hear.
Shame,
eh? But this the only way we're going to get the change is by pushing them. And pushing some of these really massive companies, you know, these aren't small players in the fish. These are, like, Appetito is massive, like, companies that if we can change them, I mean, that has massive changes across the whole country.
Yeah. I mean, I have similar problem at work, and Hannah will relate to this. But when we get, you know, your training figures, we need to do this, we need to do that, and can we do it that way? And we need to get them out. And I went, has anybody ever remembered that actually we're teaching these young 16-year-olds to look somebody in the face and shoot them?
Mm.
You know, or they're going to stand up and put their head above a parapet that's been shot at. We're sending these kids out to war.
Yeah.
And you don't give that any thought at all. You're just going, did we get the viewing figures? No, that may be what the company's about, but that's not what the job is about.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's the same with you. It may be about feeding the kids, but can we not feed them nicely?
I know.
You know, do we have to give them an apple and a banana? Can we not try something else on the side?
I know.
Can we not do this? That? Yeah.
And one example is Portsmouth Hospital, which I will honestly say I have battled hard. It was one of it's personal for me because it's one of the hospitals that Sophie found the worst for children's food. And obviously not feeding parents. And I have battled and battled and battled for 4 years with them because I want to change the hospitals that she was treated at, you know, more so than any other hospital in the country. You know, it's personal. And the three that she was at, I still can't change. And
really?
I have been battling with Portsmouth. We finally, though, in the last month, we've now got parents. It's all starting next week and the week after, but parents on neonatal ward are going to be fed. Parents on the children's ward are going to be fed. And they have redesigned the children's menu. It's incredible, the menu that's going to be coming out. And this has just been literally, I can't tell you how many people I've had to speak to and argue with, but we're really getting there. And there's now massive changes coming through.
Remember that filter you said you hadn't got?
Yeah.
I've resumed the chairmanship of here, and I have tried four occasions now. And I've only been here since July, four occasions now, to talk to the chair of the Portsmouth Hospitals Radio.
Mm.
Not even a response.
Wow.
It's disgraceful, to be fair. And you think to yourself, we can do each other so much good here.
I know.
You know, and when I look at our League of Friends here, our League of Friends are quite good, to be fair. We get nothing out of them, but what they do for the hospital is really quite good here. it pales into insignificance what they've got in the QA. And you think, why? How? How are you managing this? Please, can we tap in and go, how did you do this?
Yeah.
But there's nothing. And then you think to yourself, when the patient's going to the War Memorial here, all they have is this headset. They've got no televisions, they've got nothing else. All they've got is this headset to listen to. I am the only voice they can listen to tonight. I'm really sorry, but you are. QA, they've got that magic little television that sits on a stand. They've got a telephone that they can listen to the radio. To listen to the radio, they have to hold the headphone or the telephone to their ears. And you think, how's their hospital radio still running?
Mm.
Who would want to pay for that? You know, but they do. And they get it all, and yet they've probably been the most underfunded hospital from the NHS for decades.
Mm.
And you think, why? How does this work?
Well, let me see if I can get you in there, Paul. Because sometimes it's about contacts, and that has been some of our ways that we've managed to get through.
Yeah.
It's about who you know, and that they've opened doors for us that we have been trying to batten down, you know, absolutely knock down, and then someone in the right place has actually got us in. So, I will try and see if I can find.
Bless
it.
Your heart. Right, we've got. I've got 7 minutes left.
I know. Have we talked this quick?
We have. We've done well this time. Done well. I'm not going to play. I'm not going to be able to play any of those because I need to be playing the other one, don't I? We'll do that in a minute. So, what's new? Where do you go from here?
So we've got lots coming. Go and follow our website and our social media. You will see all of our, from our events to all of the news that's coming out. There is a lot of news to come, and particularly in the next few months. So please go and follow us. You will find all out there. You can go and sponsor a pizza night on our website.
You have no idea how many pizzas I've sponsored of yours over the years. No, I can't do another one.
I know. You can go and attend our events.
I've lost 20 kilos in the last 8 months, so I'm not having another pizza night now.
We've got 80s night tomorrow night in Leon Solent. We're very looking forward to that. I've got my outfit ready.
Who's doing that disco for you?
Oh, so someone we know is doing it all for free, which is good. But, Tina Rice. Go and follow us. Go and see what you can do. It might be the give an advent calendar for our children hospital. It might be the gifts for Christmas. It could be for next year. We've got loads of things going on. There is, just go and follow us, support us. However, what way you're able to do, whether that's a financial support, whether that's turning up at an event, whether that's running for us, jumping out of a plane, doing anything crazy.
And if you don't know what to do or where to go, just Google Sophie's Legacy. It's not hard. You can't even misspell it because it'll correct it for you. Just Google Sophie's Legacy. Look at the site. It'll show you all the people. It'll tell you all the team. It'll tell you what you can do. Tell you what you can buy. Introduce you to their shop. It'll do everything you can for you. I think that's about it for this year.
Yeah. And we have a new website that's being launched next week.
Oh, yeah.
There are so many more things. Why
did you cut you see your last one?
I know. There's so many more things coming on. We're very excited. We've been working on this behind the scenes. And I will be starting a podcast.
The only thing I don't like about interviewing you, is that I have to read 8 pages before you come on. And I have to go, what have I got to remind myself of? Oh, yeah. 8 pages. Yeah. If you can bring it down to 3 paragraphs, that'd be really lovely.
I know. That would be good.
Yeah, but then we wouldn't have an hour to spend, would we?
And I like to talk.
You do very well. Charlotte, again, I can't thank you enough for what you do. This was a song written by a young lady called Jo Downs from Stubbington. She wrote it for Sophie, in memory of Sophie, and it is The Arc of a Rainbow. Charlotte, take care.
Thank you.
No, thank you. I'm back next week with veterans. So see you then. Take care. Bye bye.
Still new, bringing joy comes easily to you with your golden smile and pure heart. Time is short. But how you've inspired us to live with passion and fire inside us. What a difference you've made to our world. You'll always be the brightest star, no matter how near or far. Forever being who you are. You are strong, you're a fighter. You see the good in every day. You try to smile, come what may. You're searching for a better way to find hope, to find answers. And love, like the arc of a rainbow. You spread your light like colors in the sky. And all the colors will never fade. You'll never fade. Love is flooding out to you. We've taken you in our hearts, and we won't let go. You'll always be the brightest star, no matter how near or far. Forever being who you are. You are strong, you're a fighter. See the good in every day. You try to smile, come what may. You're searching for a better way to find hope, to find answers. And oh, like the arc of a rainbow. You spread your light like colors in the sky.
Playing Gosport's best music 24 hours a day.
On air and online at www.gosporthospitalradio.co.uk.
Since 1993.
This is Gosport Hospital Radio.